Welcome to New World Notes, number 164. This installment is part one of an occasional series called They Warned Us. Occasional series means I'll get around to part two one of these days. And I will. Today we'll hear from three of my favorite prophets and political analysts, George Carlin, Michael Parenti, and Jello Biafra. I hope you'll keep listening. George Carlin established himself as a hit comedian before he started drifting way to the left politically. Record companies and HBO kept giving the mic back to Carlin, because in capitalism, profits trump ideology. No obscure left-wing comedian like Will Durst will ever have an HBO special, but Carlin was a proven moneymaker, so what the heck? Carlin's words here come from two different performances he gave in the 1990s. Here he's warning us about what the Wall Street bankers want. In short, that is, all wealth for themselves, no wealth for rabble like you, and if the United States economy and society gets flushed down the toilet in the process, no problemo. They've got nice little villas for themselves waiting in the Cayman Islands. If you consider the economic events of the past 3 years, you'll see that Carlin's forecast was spot on. Wall Street destroyed much of the real economy of the United States in an orgy of speculation. Then, when they began to lose money on the deal, they had their losses made good at taxpayers' expense by the U.S. Treasury. While bailing out the big banks, the government did essentially nothing to help people of the middle class and the working class. As Carlin says, this place is ruled by a big club, and you ain't in it. Wall Street's tool and handmaiden, Barack H. Obama, continues to advance the street's goal of privatizing Social Security. He pretends that, in an economic depression, federal deficits are a problem. And he pretends that the Social Security Trust Fund has some connection with the federal deficit. That's a lie. Social Security is not part of the federal budget. It's an entirely different part of the ledger. But Wall Street wants to get its sticky hands onto our Social Security, and Obama is helping. He's convened this so-called National Commission on Fiscal Responsibility and Reform, and stacked it with advocates of privatization. And incidentally, when we hear the word reform, red flags should start shooting up. If anyone in Congress really cared about the budget deficit, well, there is that ruinously expensive funding of an out-of-control military. Nah. In any case, George Carlin saw what was happening and warned us back in the 1990s. Did anybody listen? Let's have a listen now.
Politicians have traditionally hidden behind three things: the flag, the Bible, and children. No child left behind. No child left behind. Oh, really? Well, it wasn't long ago you were talking about giving kids a head start. Head start, left behind. Someone's losing ground here. But there's a reason. There's a reason. There's a reason for this. There's a reason education sucks, and it's the same reason that it will never, ever, ever be fixed. Because the owners of this country don't want that. I'm talking about the real owners now. The real owners, the big wealthy business interests that control things and make all the important decisions. Forget the politicians. They're irrelevant. The politicians are put there to give you the idea that you have freedom of choice. You don't. You have owners. They own you. They own everything. They own all the important land. They own and control the corporations. They've long since bought and paid for the Senate, the Congress, the state houses, the city halls. They got the judges in their back pockets. And they own all the big media companies, so they control just about all of the news and information you get to hear. They got you by the... They spend billions of dollars every year lobbying to get what they want. Well, we know what they want. They want more for themselves and less for everybody else. But I'll tell you what they don't want. They don't want a population of citizens capable of critical thinking. They don't want well-informed, well-educated people capable of critical thinking. They're not interested in that. That doesn't help them. That's against their interest. That's right. You know something? They don't want people who are smart enough to sit around the kitchen table to figure out how badly they're getting f***ed by a system that threw them overboard 30 years ago. They don't want that. You know what they want? They want obedient workers. Obedient workers. People who are just smart enough to run the machines and do the paperwork and just dumb enough to passively accept all these increasingly shittier jobs with the lower pay, the longer hours, the reduced benefits, the end of overtime, and the vanishing pension that disappears the minute you go to collect it. And now they're coming for your Social Security money. They want your retirement money. They want it back. So they can give it to their criminal friends on Wall Street. And you know something? They'll get it. They'll get it all from you sooner or later because they own this place. It's a big club, and you ain't in it. You and I are not in the big club. And by the way, it's the same big club they use to beat you over the head with all day long when they tell you what to believe. All day long, beating you over the head in their media, telling you what to believe, what to think, and what to buy. The table is tilted, folks. The game is rigged, and nobody seems to notice. Nobody seems to care. Good, honest, hard-working people, white collar, blue collar, doesn't matter what color shirt you have on. Good, honest, hard-working people continue. These are people of modest means. Continue to elect these rich who don't give a f*** about them. They don't give a f*** about you. They don't care about you at all. At all. At all. Yeah. You know? And nobody seems to notice, nobody seems to care. That's what the owners count on, the fact that Americans will probably remain willfully ignorant. Because the owners of this country know the truth. It's called the American dream, because you have to be asleep to believe it.
See the glory.
Tell you what. Now, to balance the scale, I'd like to talk about some things that bring us together. Things that point out our similarities instead of our differences. Because that's all you ever hear about in this country is our differences. That's all the media and the politicians are ever talking about, the things that separate us, things that make us different from one another. That's the way the ruling class operates in any society. They try to divide the rest of the people. They keep the lower and the middle classes fighting with each other so that they, the rich, can run off with all the f***ing money. Fairly simple thing happens to work. You know, anything different, that's what they're going to talk about. Race, religion, ethnic and national background, jobs, income, education, social status, sexuality, anything you can do, keep us fighting with each other so that they can keep going to the bank. You know how I describe the economic and social classes in this country? The upper class keeps all of the money, pays none of the taxes. The middle class pays all of the taxes, does all of the work. The poor are there just to scare the shit out of the middle class. Keep them showing up at those jobs. So stirring up is something I like to do from time to time, but I also like to know that I can come back to these little things we have in common, little universal moments that we share separately, the things that make us the same. They're so small we hardly ever talk about them. Did you ever look at your watch? And then you don't know what time it is. And you have to look again. And you still don't know the time. So you look a third time, and somebody says, "What time is it?" You say, "I don't know."
Okay, two George Carlin sketches from the 1990s. As far as I can tell, Carlin's analysis was correct in every single detail, and subsequent events have proven him entirely right. Correct me if he's made an error that I've overlooked. But wait, Carlin wasn't alone. At about the same time, political scientist Michael Parenti also was warning us that Wall Street and Congress have their sights set on our Social Security. Here Parenti is speaking in 1994 at the University of Vermont, the school that had fired him in the early 1970s. Parenti did have this distinction. He was fired not by the political science department, not by the dean, not by the university president. No, Parenti was fired by the university's board of trustees, the very top. I guess he rubbed somebody the wrong way. Did I mention he was an anti-war activist? Here's Michael Parenti warning us about the same things George Carlin warned us about. The welfare reform, Parenti mentions, was executed in the 1990s under William Jefferson Clinton.
There's a massive assault on government human services programs, and this has been given relatively little play in the media, except when it's doing the government's bidding. For instance, the word that's out is that certain things need reform. Welfare needed to be reformed. Now notice the use of certain terms, too, reform. These are the disinforming euphemisms that are used. Welfare wasn't reformed, it was savaged. It was destroyed. I mean, if I come over to your house and I say, you know, your house needs some rehabbing, needs a little reform, and then I level it with a bulldozer, I mean, wouldn't you be piqued? Wouldn't you feel deceived? And now we hear that same word again, Social Security. We've got to reform Social Security. Why, in 15 years, it'll be bankrupt. Ladies and gentlemen, I remember 1981 when Reagan was in office, and they said, in 15 years, Social Security will be bankrupt. It was running a surplus of $30, $40 billion then. It's still running a surplus today. Of course, they raised the Social Security tax, too. But the point is, it's at least 15 years later, it isn't bankrupt at all. It's 16 years later. It's not bankrupt. It's still running a surplus. It's a lie. But they convince people, they, from the beginning, say, well, this is going to happen, and therefore we've got to change it. The truth of the matter is that Social Security is a program that works, and it works very well, and it works for you, too. You may think you're too young to worry about it, but when you're in your middle years and trying to raise your own family, do you want parents who are broke, or do you want parents who have some Social Security pension and some means of income for themselves? And Social Security is not just an old age pension. It has three components to it. It has old age retirement support. It has survivor's support for any family of any age. If the breadwinner are killed, one or two, the people who are left destitute or indigent get Social Security. They can be 18 years old and they can collect Social Security. And the third component of it is disability. It has a disability insurance. If you're hit in an accident and you suffer disability and this puts a limit on your earning powers, you can collect Social Security. This is what they want to now dismantle. And the media is going along with it. The media begins by assuming the argument. The very thing that has to be argued and debated is already assumed. And they say, well, we all know that it needs reforming. We all know that it isn't working. It's working perfectly. In 50 years, they've never missed paying out a check. They handle $300 billion a year. And it means the difference between destitution and some measure of dignity for millions of elderly people and hundreds of thousands of disabled people. You'd never know that from the way the media treats that subject.
Michael Parenti also reminds us that when the United States decides to take over a country, it suddenly discovers rampant human rights abuses that the State Department had somehow failed to notice until last Thursday. The dictator whom we had been supporting and funding and arming for two or three decades, he suddenly becomes an intolerable threat to democracy. The corporate media become the government's cheerleading squad. And we send in planes to drop bombs onto that country's people, causing death and great suffering for innocent civilians. Your government is doing this now in Libya. In 1994, when Parenti spoke, the process was well underway with Libya and its ruler, Muammar Gaddafi. Gaddafi was demonized right and left, and everyone agreed that something drastic needed to be done about the rogue state of Libya right now. Parenti reminds his audience, 2 months ago, you couldn't find Libya on a map. Now you're convinced she's a dire threat to the United States. Then in the 1990s, something funny happened. This is me speaking, not Parenti. The State Department decided to put Libya on the back burner. No regime change, no bombing. The United States and the rest of NATO went back to doing business with Gaddafi, buying Libya's oil. On cue, the press stopped denouncing Gaddafi. Everybody forgot about the Libyan menace for the next 17 years. 17 years. And now, 2011, they're back. The United States was absolutely compelled to intervene in Libya's popular rebellion. To protect civilian lives, you see. We are protecting civilian lives in our usual way by dropping bombs and cruise missiles onto Libya's towns and cities. It's all about protecting civilian lives. It has nothing to do with controlling Libya's oil. Perish the thought. Let's hear about it from Michael Parenti, speaking in 1994. When he speaks of the Gulf War, of course he refers to the first one, 1991. And when he mentions Bush, that would be President George Herbert Walker Bush, father of George W.
One of the ways in which the media serve as the stenographers for power, or the mouthpieces for power, is the way they so eagerly and quickly, as if on cue, demonize a foreign leader who might be targeted by U.S. military intervention. I'll give you three examples in recent years. By recent years, I mean from the 1980s and 1990s. Gaddafi of Libya, Noriega of Panama, and Saddam Hussein of Iraq. Now, what those three leaders had in common is, in their quite different ways, were charting a rather independent course for their country. These three guys were demonized within a matter of weeks, you know. Gaddafi, I remember, Libya. I go around talking, people would be Gaddafi, and what about Gaddafi, what about Gaddafi, Gaddafi, Gaddafi going to get your mama, Gaddafi under your bed, watch out, Gaddafi. I say, what are you preoccupied by Gaddafi? There's one reason you're preoccupied by Gaddafi. Not because he's a threat to you, but because the media has been pumping you with stories about him. 2 months ago when they weren't doing this, nobody was you weren't talking about Gaddafi. You were going to bed, going to sleep, had a nice night. You didn't worry if he was under your bed or not. Now you're Gaddafi. And when they stop talking about him, you'll stop worrying about him again. It's kind of scary. I remember that with Saddam Hussein. Saddam Hussein was CIA. He was put in Iraq by the CIA. He was a right-wing military guy. He exterminated the Kurdish Independent Party. He exterminated the Iraqi Communist Party. I mean, this guy was not particularly good news. But he also did some other things. He was developing the country. He trained a whole cadre of engineers. He put out education plans. And he was fighting for an independent course on the oil pricing. And that was his mistake. And Bush went after him. So we now find even a conservative nationalist, if he's an independent nationalist and doesn't act like a purely comprador ruler, that is, a ruler who is a client state leader of U.S. corporate American imperialism, the kind of ruler who says, come on in, boys, it's all yours, do what you want with the country, there's no development, there's no occupational safety laws, there's no minimum wage laws, there's no unions, or they're very small, very weak, if they get out of line, we'll beat the hell out of them with our civil guard. Our God, who are trained, financed, equipped, and advised by you. And you come on in, invest in cheap labor, your profit level, your value-added level, the rates are 3-4 times what they'll be in Ohio or California. Close your factory there. Come on here, open it up here. It's all yours. That's the kind of leaders they want. And when they get a leader who charts an independent course, and that's Noriega of Panama, he said, I got $10 million from the CIA. Noriega was CIA. It's no accident that Trujillo, his boss, the military leader who took over in Panama and took back the Panama Canal and then started all sorts of reforms, human service programs, education for the common people. It's no accident that less than a year after Reagan got into office, Trujillo's plane exploded in midair. A bomb blew him to pieces and Noriega was put in his place. But Noriega still had the Panamanian military was a rather progressive one, a nationalist, populist military. And there were limits to what he could do. And when he started refusing to do what the CIA want on drug deals and on anti-Sandinista moves, that's when they went after him. And the media report him as called him a jungle rat. I remember Dan Rathers, the liberal Dan Rathers, saying, Noriega, we call him a swamp rat. The swamp rat, Noriega, crafty and full of guile, like he's an expert on swamp rats. You ever heard of him? So you turn to your fellow Americans, you say, how could a country, Libya, a country with which a short time ago you couldn't even find on the map, headed by a guy whose name we still can't all agree on how to spell or even pronounce, with a population of 3 million, 3 million, and a ragtag army of 50,000, how can that country be a mortal threat to the survival and interests of the United States? It's not a mortal threat to us. He was a threat to the oil companies, that's all. His unspeakable sin was he and his colonels led a colonel's rebellion in 1968 in a country that had a social structure like Saudi Arabia, our wonderful ally Saudi Arabia today. That is a country that had mass poverty and a few obscenely rich families that had hundreds of billions of dollars more money than knew what to do with. He took over that country and he started to use that money for social programs. 40 million trees planted in forestation programs, education programs, health clinics set up, roads put in, and the like. And he nationalized the oil industry. He took it from the big oil companies. He said, the oil is in our land. The people who live on this land should get something for it. He still sells the oil to us at relatively the same price. It's no loss to you and me. The loss is to Exxon and Mobil.
Many liberals have expressed dismay at how right-wing, corporate, militaristic, privatize everything, pro-Wall Street, pro-Chamber of Commerce, pro-pollution, anti-union, anti-middle class, and anti-working class, this alleged Democrat, Obama, is. Well, Jello Biafra warned us back in the summer of 2008, before the election. Don't forget that Obama was briefly a senator. Jello says, all you have to do is look at Obama's voting record in the Senate and listen to his campaign rhetoric. Obama is John McCain, is George W. Bush, is Bill Clinton. Well, Jello warned us. Next time, let's pay attention. I'll say goodbye here. NewWorldNotes.blogspot.com. It'll get to my non-carborundum. Thanks for listening, and please come back next week. Here's Jello.
But beware of the enemy of my enemy is my friend. Is Obama the anti-Hillary? Judging from his voting record, I'm not even sure that's true. Granted, it would be kind of cool to have somebody in the White House whose first name rhymes with Iraq, whose middle name is Hussein, and his last name rhymes with Osama. And luckily, they're giving us another choice besides two royal dynasties, Bush Incorporated and the Hillbillies. But Obama looks all the more attractive as a leader precisely because he's never actually led. No defining issue or accomplishment except, he's so cool! He's so cool! How can you not dig him? He's like the audacity of hope! Change we can believe in as long as it isn't too specific! He's so cool! And he is cool when you see him on TV. He's a wonderful speaker, comes across as a cool guy you could actually hang out and talk to, if only that was reflected in his voting record. Obama voted to make the Patriot Act permanent. Obama came out against the war early in 2002, but then when he was in a position of power, he keeps voting money to continue the war when he finally has the power to cut it off. And watch his language on the war very carefully. He's a very clever lawyer, after all. He says that my first act will be to tell the Pentagon to find a way to end the war. Withdraw the troops. To where? Ending the war does not mean taking the troops out. And Obama has also said he doesn't really want to take the troops out. He wants to leave as many as 80,000 of them and calls for protecting American enclaves like the Green Zone. Yo, the Green Zone belongs to the Iraqis. We stole it. It's at least, what, a third of the size? The Green Zone isn't Obama. Saddam's palace, like a few buildings like they show in the aerial photo. I've seen one of the whole thing, and it's maybe a third the size or more of Manhattan. It's all the downtown real estate, and we stole it all. People can't drive to work on all the boulevards anymore. It doesn't belong to us. We need to leave. And surely he's aware that we put almost $800 million into the largest embassy ever built by a factor of 10, right along the river in the Green Zone, although it's a tiny dot on the Green Zone photo, even though it's, what, the size of 80 football fields. 3,000 Americans expected to work there. A wall 20 feet thick around it. Got its own missile system inside, its own water supply, its own electricity supply, since we never bothered to fix the Iraqis. Just gave money to Bechtel. They didn't fix it, and that was the end of that. And basically, you know, but what does it say to the Iraqis when it's the closest thing to us finishing a project on time? The real goal, and Obama and Hillary and Pelosi know it, is to never, ever leave. I mean, at least Ted Koppel was honest on Charlie Rose a few nights ago when he said, well, you know, the talking walnut or the clamshell on his head and stuff. But we have to have 50,000 troops somewhere in that area, and we have nowhere else left to go. How about the Iraqis? Even the puppet we put in as a so-called president is telling us to get out now. And many of you know that Obama completely reversed course with a calculated stabbing in the back of every single person in this room, where after initially threatening to filibuster the new law legalizing all of the NSA's illegal wiretaps on people and letting the phone company off the hook for spying, phone companies off the hook for spying on us as well, he turned around and voted yes and gave Bush and Cheney damn near everything they wanted and a lot more than they expected. Legalizing the exact same crimes that got Nixon thrown out of office during Watergate. In 06, it was a little different. Obama, with all his glow and halo, no more illegal wiretapping of American citizens. No more ignoring the law when it is convenient. No one should get a free pass to violate the basic civil liberties of the American people. Not the President of the United States, not the telecom companies that fell in line with warrantless surveillance programs. But now the NSA can just go after everybody like a vacuum cleaner. But then they have a new problem. They've got so much data. How do you find somebody bad in there? But at least some of the phone companies did their patriotic duty and cut off the FBI's wiretaps when they forgot to pay the phone bill. After all, as Margaret Thatcher used to say, everything must be business as usual. Yeah, you're with us or against us. Obama voted to confirm Condoleezza Rice. He voted for putting up that anti-immigrant Berlin Wall border fence and then admitted he just did it as a horse trade to get somebody else to vote for a bill he wanted through. That infamous quote, sometimes you have to trim your sails. Well, you look back at what he did, giving the NSA the right to spy on all of us and everything. I can't help but think of a grinning Obama slashing the Constitution with a box cutter as he trims the sails. More trimmed sails. He said he wants universal health care, but we can't have single payer because disease industry bean counters, you know, the health insurance industry, they might wind up unemployed. Which is kind of like saying we have to let the mafia keep going because otherwise we'll have unemployed gangsters. Health insurance scam artists, quote, need a seat at the table. Isn't the health insurance industry the problem? And 2005 Energy Policy Act, Obama voted tax breaks and subsidies for fossil fuels while Exxon was taking in $30 to $40 billion a year and the biggest profit any corporation has ever made. Even McCain voted against that one. And Obama, as far as alternative fuels goes, great idea. He says we should run our cars on liquefied coal. Wonder who bought his mouth for that one. And if he's so law and order now over spying on suspected terrorists, meaning all of us, and executing child rapists, why not apply that same zeal to promising to investigate and prosecute crimes committed by the Bush administration?